Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Siddhartha. Siddhartha took sannyas in 1974, aged 4. And was known in the commune as Little Siddhartha, a child very much loved by sannyasins and in particular by Osho. Today Siddhartha is a musician DJ who has played in the most important festivals around the world. I'm so happy to have Siddhartha on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Siddhartha, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm well, thank you.
Great. So normally I start the interview by asking guests how they came across Osho, but your case is a bit different. You were in India at the age of 3 months and met Osho when you were 4 years old, and in fact is when you took sannyas.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Well, okay, so I would say that the reason, first of all, that we went to India, of course with my parents, because I was a baby at that time, was because for most of the same reasons that most people in the late 60s and the early 70s started leaving Europe, basically, and their old lives. In most cases, people who had already started their whole life, like my father, he was a hairstylist, and he was quite successful. And at the same time, his career was taking off, and he was dealing with a lot of neurotic people, and you know, with things like hair and makeup and all that kind of really plastic stuff. He was also getting into meditation and microbiotic food. And there was, at the end of the 60s, the beginning of the 70s, was a period when basically people who had been protesting for change, it was very similar to what's happening now, seemed to have gotten somewhere positive, and all of a sudden everything kind of went back in time. All of the great leaders of these movements were getting assassinated, from anywhere from Kennedy to Martin Luther King to Malcolm X to eventually John Lennon. So people were starting to get disappointed and they were looking for something else. So my parents basically were sick of their lives in Europe and wanted something better for me and decided to go to India, as many people did. And in that trip, I was about, yeah, as you said, 3 or 4 months old. We went originally up to the Himalayas, and we met a beautiful Baba whose name was Hadrikan Baba. He was a yogi. And we were with him for quite a while. And me and him actually connected a lot. And he actually took care of me. He was a beautiful man. And he taught me how to sit in a lotus. And he gave me a beautiful little carpet to meditate on. And through him, we started falling in love with India. And we eventually went down. And we thought we might see the Hare Krishna movement. When we got there, it definitely wasn't for us. And we ran out of money, so we had to go back to Switzerland. And that's when I was about turning, I wasn't 4 yet. We went to Switzerland, and it happened that my grandmother had met, while we were in India, had met a disciple of Osho, whose name was Diksha, an Italian lady, who was in charge, basically, of traveling around the world and finding people who were interested in Osho's vision and Osho's work, and also maybe interested in helping out with donations for the commune, either with donations or work, which was very common at that time because, most of the people who were going there were all educated professionals and could, you know, decide for themselves if they liked what was going on. And most people really thought it was interesting. Anyway, so when we got back to Geneva, my grandmother was waiting for us to basically take us back to India and go meet Osho. And I remember the first time I saw Osho, because I actually happened to have memories from my around 4 years old. I remember that my grandmother showed me a picture of Osho. And I definitely thought Osho wasn't a man for some reason. I thought he was a woman. But I really liked, I was very attracted to his picture. Anyway, we all went back and we all met Osho. And my father, my mother, my grandmother, and my aunt, alongside me, we all took sannyas. And that's when it all started, basically, for us.
When you met Osho, he said that you have been friends in another life 100 years back and that he had been expecting you. Have you ever spoken to Osho about this, or do you have any glimpses of this past connection?
Well, I will say something is that with, first of all, my relationship with Osho was a little strange because I was a kid, and we were definitely, we had a proximity. I definitely felt on his part that he was very open to me and he really had a lot of regard and love for me. But it wasn't aimed at anything particular. The connection we had was very sporadic. I would see him often, but it was never usually scheduled except, well, we can go into that later. But with me, most times I was with him, was usually quite silent. He would ask me a few very innocent questions, and we would do things like walk in his garden, take long walks, which he loved to do, or he would take me into his room and let me see all the gadgets he had, because people would bring him things from all over the world. And so, you know, I would just be in awe from all these presents he would get from disciples and stuff. And then he would usually tell me to pick something, and then I would leave and then usually give it away to somebody else. But I would say that for me, just looking at him seemed like I had known him for time eternal, that there had never been a moment where I was never with him. But I don't particularly remember that, but I do remember meeting him. I do remember as soon as I saw him, this little carpet that Babaji gave to me. As soon as I saw him, I got up, I walked over to him, I put my carpet down, and I lied down completely in full prostration on my stomach, which is the most devotive way you can show respect to a guru in India. You don't just bow from your knees, you actually lie down completely. And I did that, and I got back up, and I basically sat down in front of him and just stared at him. And as that happened, he said, "Wow, Siddhartha, now you've finally come. I've been waiting for you for, you know, 100 years. So good to see you." Basically, I could get you the more detailed story. But what I remember in that moment is as soon as the rest of my family started meeting him, I saw Vivek was by the chair. So I went over to her and we started actually playing while he was finishing the darshan of that night. And he actually had to tell us to stop playing on a few occasions. But that's when our friendship started. But I don't have a direct recollection of him saying that that he knew me so long ago. But he always treated me like he did. So anyway.
Yeah, and there are some amazing pictures, which I hope I can gather and publish in this episode, of you with Osho as a child, which speak a thousand words. They're very, very beautiful.
Oh, there's quite a lot. I do want to say that, well, I guess I'll let you ask the questions first. But for me, of course, I'm so honored of the fact that Osho maybe singled me out in certain moments. And it was always an amazing honor to be in his presence. But I also want to say that there was one thing that I always could feel from a very young age, that whoever he might have a personal relationship with, that was a very personal thing. But that didn't necessarily reflect into anything bigger. That didn't make you special as a person. And many people who were close to him, it got to their heads. They thought that they were automatically very spiritual just because Osho had a liking to them. And I think Osho in that sense was a human being and also had attractions to people for his own reasons. And it wasn't necessarily that you were better or more special. And the feeling I always got from Osho is that no matter what, the most important thing for Osho was his vision for what he wanted to express and share with all of us and all of the world. And that was always something you could feel. You could always feel that that was the most important thing about him. And that was his priority. And he had this it was a feeling of a very strong single-pointedness, a very concentrated goal, dream, aim, vision, whatever you want to call it. And that was always very, very strong I just wanted to tell you that.
Ah, that's amazing. And in fact, I wanted to touch upon this, and I want to frame it a little bit for people who don't know you and don't know the background. So Osho referred to you in many public discourses, and in one particular discourse he said that you were a rare child and one of the ancient ones. That,
you know, yes.
I don't know what that means. And on another occasion he said that you were a Buddhist monk in a previous life and that you retained memories of that. And also
yes.
Osho said that when you met him for the first time, you behaved as a grown-up man. So first, if you want to tell more about that, and I'm curious to know if you have any recollection of your past life as a monk, maybe. And then I want to link it to the what you just said about being special. If Osho had told me as a child all those beautiful things that said about you, it would probably have created a sort of pressure of expectation to become someone special. So how is it for you?
Well, for me, I have to say that in my early childhood, it was amazing because basically I didn't pay much attention to anybody around. Well, this is quite interesting. Osho referred to kids a lot. He talked about innocence, and he talked about the importance of appreciating your innocence is somehow you only really can appreciate it once you've lost it. So the difference between the innocence of an animal or a human animal is different in that sense. So an animal lives in its instinct, in its innocence, in its fight or flight form, and that's perfectly pure for what it is. A human being, we start out like that, and then as we become connected to the world, we slowly lose contact with our true selves, the person who has no name, you can say, right? And he talks about that it's a tragic, it's very tragic because you're losing something that's so beautiful. But the way it is originally, in the way we live, it can't be applied. You can only really apply that innocence once you feel like you're not in touch with it anymore. You know, you go back to that. And so he also said that actually we really lose our innocence very, very young. So I've always had a theory because of the way I was brought up around and what I was exposed to. And because basically the 70s was an experimentational period for Osho. He was attracting people who were extremely educated, extremely open-minded, people who were working in psychology, psychiatry, therapy, rehabilitation, alternative meditations. But somehow when they met Osho, they were able to do experimentational work with him alongside his disciples to really crystallize all of these methods, these great methods that you could go and experience in Pune One, which had to do from enlightenment intensive to Rolfing to encounter to rebirthing to shiatsu to tai chi to, you know, just so many things. So me as a child, I understood my relationship with Osho, and I understood the way people treated me because of my relationship with him, I could also see that I wasn't so innocent. I was listening to things, feeling things, and I was going through basically just as much as many of the adults were going through. And I think that there was a few kids who, not all of them, but a few kids who were experiencing the same phenomena that I was. Whereas I was really feeling that people were going through things for the first time in their lives. And even though I was so small, it triggered something in me. And so I didn't like to do normal kids things. I usually gravitated towards older kids or grown-ups. And I already started, for good or for worse, going through a very similar process, I guess, as many adults were. The problem is that when you're a kid, you can't necessarily express yourself the same way a grown-up can. And you're also limited through age and also through prejudice from adults as well, you know. So I was in touch with a lot of things that I'm in touch with now. Basically nothing's changed since that period, and I think that I was able to experience that through Osho, because Osho gave the kids that lived in the actual ashram itself, we had a lot of freedom. So I don't know if I actually answered your question. I kind of got lost thinking about that. Sorry. Should we start again?
No, absolutely. You know, there are definitely elements of the question for sure. And in fact, what I'd love to understand a little bit more, as you said that the kids in the commune were given total freedom, and it sounds like particularly you were taking this freedom even further. For example, you were not attached to your biological parents. It seems like you were going up and down, away from your mom for days. You wanted to be with the adults and other sannyasins. And Osho said about you, again, that your different upbringing, full of conditionings and inhibition, would make you a beautiful human being, multidimensional, open-minded. So I'd love to understand a bit more, now that you're a grown-up and adult, how are you benefiting from this freedom you enjoyed in childhood?
Well, I think we all have our childhoods. So for me, I guess, till a certain moment, my childhood was normal. I definitely have gone through up and downs, like everybody in their life. Especially, it's hard to be so close to such a beautiful man and see also so much strange things happen around him, which is natural. But, you know, it's a tormenting relationship in a way, because it was such era muy potente como as a man, you know. But I would say that basically, yeah, for me, his message was just really love and compassion and humility, you know, being extraordinary. And I think that I'm finally, for me, that's very, very important. That's been the greatest gift I've gotten from him, basically, is compassion, love, and humility. And that's basically all I can say as far as the total outcome for me right now. That's what's been my the most important guideline in my life, when things have done very well for me, or when things have gone very dark and I've gone down that dark tunnel. Somehow those three things for me are the most outstanding things. And also to put yourself 100% into whatever's going on, you know, to really live what life is giving you in the moment and head it on 100% and really live it without hesitation. Because if the more you hesitate in life, and the more you swallow your instincts, the more damage it can really cause on you, and also indirectly to the whole world, you know. So it's really good, actually, to go for your gut feeling and don't compromise, you know, in that sense. I mean, compromise is not a show of love, like religion might want you to believe. Sacrifice, if you're manipulated into it, is not something positive. And in fact, that's been the bad of the world, right? People are basically have been forced into submission and into repression since we've been born. And it's not you could maybe think of it as very self-absorbed. And maybe Osho would even say, yes, it is self-absorbed. Because if you don't start with yourself, then you're going to be in no condition to deal with anything else. You know, you have to start with your own house. You have to clean up your own house before you can get into other people's mess. But I think that Osho was a courageous, courageous, courageous man. He was a lion. He wasn't a sheep, you know. And his thing was, what I get from him, and there's so many different beautiful aspects to Osho, but for me it was this thing of trust, which is even higher than love, which is something I've had to deal with in my life, and this single-pointedness of where you're going and what you're willing to do for that, you know. If Osho would have been a tantric master hundreds of years ago and would have told me to jump into a fire, I would have jumped without thinking twice. And I think I still would, you know, if he was here physically, you know, for me, when I would see him, basically, I didn't see eventually a man or a woman. I just saw an impeccable being. And that impeccableness is also just a beautiful example. And things would happen around him. You know, I would break down when I was 5 or 6 or 7. He would just touch me and I would break down. I would cry as if I had been alive for 1,000 years and had never been touched or something. You know, it was the most amazing feeling of liberation. And I think that spirit, in a way, of risk, because once you put things out there, there's no taking them back. You can't go back. Something has been set into action. And once that wheel starts rolling, then you're really, you know, in a way, you're really playing with the dice of life. You're really risking everything. You're risking the image of yourself, the way you want to seem around people, all the shit you do to lie to yourself and to lie to society, you know, so you can fit in. All of that stuff disappears. And in a way, it's terrible, because then that kind of easiness disappears. You know, you can have everything. You can have comfort, you can have luxury, you can have money. But once you start to really risk it all, even that doesn't compensate, because you're really in the abyss. Anything can happen, and you're very exposed. And that's really the only way you can learn and learn about yourself, and therefore also have the honor and the privilege to maybe really delve into a relationship, whatever that relationship might be, whether it is to a woman, to your work, to a man, to a god, to a discipline. But that, you know, carefree, in a way, leap into the abyss, into nothing, really. You know, that's my thing with Osho.
That's amazing. And something that I didn't plan to bring up, but I read about, again, what Osho said about you, is that he said sometimes he would pass by and look into your eyes. And he said that you would go in samadhi, but you didn't know. You as a child, you were not aware of it. He said maybe one day he will realize, but he would look into your eyes and you would go in samadhi.
the few experiences I had with him, I think that's maybe you could call it some. That's a beautiful word. I would say for me it was more like a touch of grace, as he said. I felt something. But I wasn't intellectual. Well, in a way, that was a good thing, but I didn't have an intellectuality at that moment to really analyze what was happening. As I grew older, the last few moments I had with him before the Pune one ended, I definitely had moments of ecstasy with him. But that would happen to me, I think, more often than maybe he thought. For me, just being around him, I would go into a somatic state on many occasions, just because his physical energy was very, very strong. This guy literally, it wasn't aggressive or anything, like, because the word strong can be misleading. This was even more than that. Something Osho could be. When the ashram first started being an ashram in Corrigan Park, there were a few hundred people living inside the complex. And everybody was doing everything, cleaning, building, organizing, moving around, in between all the meditations. At that time, still, I was the only kid. So I was always up to trouble in the ashram. And Osho would, when he wanted to leave his house, his house wasn't isolated yet from the rest of the community. So he would just walk around. And many times you would see a big gathering of people, and all of a sudden there would be a dead silence. And everybody would realize that Osho was just there, standing by, observing everything. And nobody had noticed for a long time. So he had a very subtle, clean, impeccable vibe to him. Yet when he wanted to communicate, that changed and it became like thunder and lightning. And you could really, really, really feel it, you know. So for me, I was seeing people coming there, for instance, a young woman getting into her sexuality, for instance, or a young man getting into his sexuality, or things like that. And when you're a kid, you can feel all of that. So, of course, as kids, we were exposed. We weren't put into any physical situations with adults or anything like that. There was, I have to say that there was never anything weird, perverted, or bad done to any of us kids. But still, we were around a lot of things happening. So we felt, at least some of my friends alongside me, we felt things. So I was very curious about a lot of things that most young kids shouldn't be curious about. And so through Osho, I somehow grew up very fast because of that. So I wasn't satisfied by playing Ken and Barbie or playing doctor anymore. I wanted to grow up as fast as I could because I wanted to be able to really start doing all these things that Osho was talking about. I really couldn't wait for that. It was so exciting to see these people who were coming from really uptight worlds and just completely explode and open up in themselves. And seeing that was just amazing. It was very, very inspiring. And so for me, first of all, I don't think that we're limited to a guru or a teacher. Although I think many sannyasins became disillusioned because somehow they thought that they had a deal with Osho and that he owed them enlightenment, which I think is just a big crock of shit. Osho never owed anybody anything. Osho was more like a signpost that could point to a direction. And Osho would have been very happy to know that from that stepping stone, you could also get to many other disciplines that might not have anything to do with Osho, but through meeting Osho and coming from Osho, you can have another understanding of so many techniques that I feel are badly interpreted by many people. And Osho had this knack of understanding what other great people in history wanted to do in their work. He could capture that and he could embody that in so many ways. And I think it's a great thing to never be satisfied with one person. And I have to say that I have seen a phenomenon of lots of old sannyasins that I've known since I'm a child, who they maybe went to some other guru, which is fine. But besides doing that, they also went out of their way to say that Osho's work failed for them. And here I am, a sannyasin, sitting next to another person who's still using the same name that was given to him by Osho, who at that time is somehow rejecting Osho's work because he's chosen somebody else. So for me, my head would be like, first of all, it's not one or the other. You can have it all. And second, who told you that they were going to get you enlightened? Who told you that they were going to do this for you? It has nothing to do with Osho if you don't feel happy in the point you are in your life. It has something to do with yourself and your own process. And if you discard one thing thinking it didn't work, then you're never going to find anything that's going to be productive for you, because nobody owes you anything. Seeing grace, experiencing a touch of grace, is nothing that is owed to us. It's a privilege, and if it comes, it's amazing. And if it doesn't, just wanting it to happen is good enough. Just that intention alone is fine. You know, there's not some cake at the end of the a treasure box at the end of the rainbow that we all going to experience in the same way. And so the point I was telling this one friend is, look, somehow the only reason me and you are talking here right now is because indirectly we met Osho, and here we are. So even if you're telling me you're unsatisfied with the whole process you lived with him, we still have the good luck of being together and being able to reminisce about all these times that we had, that somehow was a space that Osho created, which was an amazing thing. He created a space for so many adventurous, strange, eccentric, special people just to come and gather and to do things that had never really been done yet. There was a little bits of roots from here and there, all these processes that have started over the last, 5,000 years. And Osho just united all of that together. And that's great.
Yeah, I really love your point about people taking responsibilities over their own enlightenment, you know, that, and in my personal view and experience, I think if Osho can help me or other people, there is very little chance of getting any help or going anywhere. So,
well, yeah, and I don't, and that's the thing, he was never there to help us, you know. It was the opposite. It was like, you know, for instance, it's, you know, my mother, she would say that she's Swiss. Okay. So my grandfather was a great skier. When the whole family would go up to the Matterhorn and take the, you know, the hardest ski slope down, he wouldn't go with them. He would go on the other side of the mountain, you know, where there was nobody, and he would ski down. But so the first time that my mother skied, she didn't have the sticks. And what my father did was put her on two skis. And as soon as they were looking down the hill, before she could think, he just pushed her. And she rolled down the hill like she was a snowball. Of course, it didn't work. But after that, she was never scared again, you know, because she was literally just pushed into the abyss. And I think that that's what beautiful enlightened masters do. And Osho is one of those men. What was amazing is Osho could also talk to you about Gurdjieff or Jesus Christ, or Muhammad, or Bodhidharma, or Buddha, or any of the Zen masters, or any philosophers, and you were there with that person. You know, he had a feeling of timelessness. You know, and as if he had been a disciple or a friend of all of these people that I just mentioned. So through him, you could also experience other people in a really, really beautiful way. Of course, sometimes he could be critical of people's work and stuff like that. But in general, you could really go into so many worlds through him, you know, and that was amazing. He was very generous, very, 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 very generous. And I think that that's amazing. And therapy and meditation, the Western approach to doing that, I think, changed through him. He opened up a real way for a Westerner to delve into this Eastern way without it being a esoteric, superficial, plastic, pseudo kind of, you know, the typical Westerner who goes to India for a few months and then is using patchouli and lots of incense and looks really spiritual. No, it wasn't that. It was something he made. His school was a school where if you were going to go for it, then you were really going to be stripped and completely exposed to your own bullshit. And it was going to be put up to your face constantly. So you couldn't escape from your own games, you know, and that was really, really amazing. And that's...
Yeah. So carrying on this line, what's in your view Osho's biggest contribution to humanity?
Wow. Osho's biggest contribution to humanity. I would say, that's a big one. I would say that's a freedom of expression, emotional expression. But it's bigger than that, and I think it has to do with a big thing, which is femininity, right? Which is this, you know, this masculine and feminine energy is a reality, whether we're in the form of the body or not. I feel. And I think that there has been, over the years, down the years, always been a very male approach to everything, from politics to the way the household runs, to the way society works, to everything. And what Osho did for, I would even say, for more Indians than Westerners, before even the first Westerners started coming to India, was to go down to a core thing, which can sound very, very basic for people, but has to do with our sexuality. Through the repression of sexuality creates perversion and creates a very dangerous, very, very dangerous, deadly blockage in humanity. And the fact that somehow all these alternative things have been always controlled by men, but it's actually a feminine energy, and that basically... out of this male fear we have towards this femininity, we as a humankind we've repressed it anywhere we could have. And Osho unleashed, he opened up that box, you know, basically. I don't know. For me, he showed me how important that expression is, and how important it is to really, as a man, to really open up and show your vulnerability in front of that feminine energy, because it's so strong and intimidating that it's always created a reaction in humankind to try and kill it. But when that opens up and you get in touch with that femininity in yourself, that's a big deal for humankind. And I think that he's done that for women and for men. It was a big, for me, that's his big legacy, is that that thought of really seeing that repression is the seed, in a way, of the devil, of all the bad shit that happens in the world. You know, it's just repression, repression, repression. And it starts with the repressed woman, who at the end basically is there, has been there always, so beautiful and so vulnerable and so open and so emotionally connected, you know. And that's, I know I'm not expressing it properly, but some of that's my thing for that touches me with that. It has to do with the liberation of feminine energy and you know, the poison of repression, basically. And that's the root of all fucked up stuff in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
I think you express it very beautifully, and it's a great insight, and thank you for that. To link sexual repression with this feminine quality is also a fresh perspective. It's a new angle that, you know, it's great, and I'm thankful for that. So clearly Osho has been very special to you when you were growing up, and it's clear from this interview the way you talk about Osho. What's your relationship with Osho today?
Oh, my relationship with Osho today is, I'm an Osho lover, and I see, basically, because I love to hear, listen to his old discourses, and I just remember him a lot. I just, you know, have lots of references, you know, because I've listened to so many discourses. There's always something that'll come up. I'll remember a line, I'll remember something about him. But more than remembering him, for me, he's still very much alive. His work is very much alive. And most times when I encounter somebody who is a body worker or a therapist, and I have a really great meeting with them and something touched me, they usually were either influenced by Osho, even if they're not disciples of Osho, or were disciples of Osho, or had learned what, you know, part of their studies in whatever discipline they were learning, somehow they had come across an Osho book or a sannyasin who was also working in the same field, and somehow they were influenced by that. And you can really see the difference. There's a certain kind of a quality of body workers and therapists who have had some kind of influence from Osho. There's always a different little touch of quality that I really, really appreciate. And for me, my whole process, Osho is very relevant to everything that happens in my life, because I'm an emotional being, you know, so I have to deal with those emotions. And you know, there's always going to be some beautiful reference where Osho is talking about the exact particular thing that might be happening to me in that moment. And so I can use it and become inspired by it and feel like, just to remember his smile or remember his intensity, for me, is something that happens to me every day. So he's very relevant. And I would like to say that, because I was brought up in India a lot and I have a lot of Indian friends, you know, I'm 48 years old. Osho, before Westerners started coming to meet Osho, Osho was a great debater. He was a philosopher. He was a professor of philosophy in the University of Jabalpur. And he was also, would give advice to many important politicians and thinkers in India. But he would do debates against very important pundits and philosophers and politicians in India in front of hundreds of thousands of people. When people knew that Osho, Bhagwan, was going to speak, they would come literally in the thousands just to hear him completely obliterate and destroy this other figure, because a debate is an argument. So they would take two different points of view, argue it, and Osho would always win. So at that time already, Osho was talking about the repression of the woman and how fucked up man is through also negating that femininity in himself. And this was stuff he was talking to in front of hundreds of thousands of Indians. And he wrote this book called From Sex to Super Consciousness, which was a book that if you talk to many Indians to this day, they still have their illegally printed version of this book. It really touched so many lives in India. So I think that Osho's legacy is a thing that's a very personal for many people. And at the same time, he really did impact many aspects of Indian society, especially the more educated middle class who could have access to him. He was talking about things that they had never even dared to talk about with their sisters at that time. So Osho was a real revolutionary person as far as his approach to this support for women. And in the ranch, most important positions, even in Pune, and at least the last time I was in Pune now too, were usually handled by women, you know. So that was just something I wanted to mention.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Thank you for bringing this up. Yeah, Osho was definitely pro-women. So, as I mentioned, you were known in the commune as Leader Siddhartha, and you were loved by so many sannyasins, and many sannyasins, all sannyasins, listened to this podcast, and they knew you when you were a child, and perhaps they're wondering, what are you up to, how you are, what's going on with you? So, would you like to say anything to them?
Yes, I would like to say that I'm proud to say that I was really part of his experiment. He didn't want to necessarily have to take care of everybody's kids, you know what I mean? But certain people did bring their kids, and I was one of them. And for me, it was an honor. And I also did go through a lot because of that, but basically it was an honor to have met him. And I see him, his influence everywhere. And that's the thing. He didn't owe anybody anything. So through what I was exposed to as a sannyasin, I think it might have made moments more difficult in my life. I've gone through a lot. It was very hard for me when Osho died. And I think I tried to avoid reality for many years after that. I didn't really know where my place was in the world. So anything I did, I was still lost. You know, I don't know if you understand what I mean, but it was never, I was still in a reaction, I think, from his death. And as I get older, I become more of a nobody and just somebody who wants to be that in touch with love, celebration, humility, and compassion. And that's just what Osho embodies for me and what I want to live. That's what I want to be here now. And what I'm doing, I've DJed, I've been always a creative person. Right now I work for a CBD company. I work for a Swiss bio CBD company. CBD basically comes from the marijuana plant and it's used for lots of different ailments. And I make the extractions of these plants. So I work for a CBD company. Every single day for me, Osho is a reference. And I would say that if anybody could ever look at, well, there's a beautiful book called The Mustard Seed, which was a series of discourses about Jesus. And also The Path of Love, which was a series of discourses on Kabir. And those are, for me, some of the most beautiful, most important discourses in my life. And for me, it's the message of love that I live every day. And also not when you're pissed off or whatever, it's all okay. You know, when things are happening, it's good to go into those things in the moment in order to also go through them. You know, when you stay stuck, you're stuck and everything's fucked up. And Osho was into that. He was, go for it. Don't run away from that. It's like, you know, the tooth, when you have a bad tooth and you know you can go to the dentist and he'll take the tooth out and all the pain will go away. But it'll only happen if you take the tooth out, you know. So it's good to just to face it. Go for it as fast as you can. Don't run away from it. Don't run away from pain. Don't run away from sadness. Don't run away from happiness. Don't run away from peace, because nothing lasts forever. You know, this too shall pass. But that goes for the good and that goes for the bad. And time goes by fast. And so we find ourselves in a moment maybe where we haven't given ourselves a chance to be alive here and now, you know. And if you don't do that, you can be in a moment where you can say, wow, shit, where have I been? What have I been doing? I've been so caught up in such mundane, minute things that I haven't really been able to enjoy the temple I live in, you know? And sometimes that temple is horrible and sometimes it's beautiful, but it's ours. And the sooner you see it, the sooner things can start happening. And that's what I can say.
You mentioned you are a musician DJ. And
yes.
So I just want to say that from what I read online, it seems like you're actually very successful and you did very well for yourself and you're very creative. You introduced some new styles. So again, I just want to commend you and acknowledge that as a child growing up in the commune, as an adult, you've been very successful professionally. And so what are you up to? What are your latest projects?
Okay, well, I still play. I still collect music. I still play. I became very, I guess at one moment in my life, very arrogant and cocky. And so I think when you don't appreciate things for what they are in the moment, life is like a Zen stick itself. It just gives you a big kick in the ass. So I had to rearrange my life and go back to that, you know, to really stop and listen to the music again. I wasn't listening, hearing properly anymore. I wasn't enjoying it. I was probably doing too much drugs and kind of in this cloud of haze. And somehow life kicked me in the ass. And I realized that I wasn't appreciating that anymore. So I completely stopped it about 4 years ago. I left Chile. I started getting into other things. And now I'm getting back into music again. And I guess also I'm doing that through just what we were talking about, you know, trying to be as present as I can and moment to moment in my life. And yeah, music is so important. I started missing it. So now I've gotten back into it alongside the job I just told you about that I have. And so slowly, slowly I'm networking again because I have good contacts. And I've realized that now for me, I don't play in front of hundreds or thousands of people anymore. But when I'm alone at my house and I just bought 5 new records and I listened to them. I enjoyed them so much. And I remember that there was a moment in my life where I had stopped enjoying that, you know, that the art of listening is so important. So if you're going to be an actor or you're going to be somebody who's going to share music with somebody as a DJ or share your own music, in order to really share it, you also have to somehow absorb it 100% in yourself. You have to make it yours. It has to become that tangible that you can really appreciate it so much that you can also communicate it, you know? And it's a big responsibility when you're playing with either techniques, meditation techniques, when you're creativity, art, communication, because you're touching a lot of people. So it's really important to be very, very humble, you know, that humility is important. And I don't mean humility in the sense of being a sheep in a mass of sheep. Humility and the awe of existence, of creativity itself, of the beauty of life, of the ugliness of life, just to appreciate it and to absorb it. That's the kind of humility that I started missing in my life that I've gotten back in touch with. And I think that that's all I can say about that.
Okay, so we have covered a lot of ground and we are heading towards the end and I've got a final couple of questions. But before that, anything you would like to add?
Oh, what I would like to add is, yes, I would like to say that when Osho died, he assigned 21 people to basically take care of his affairs and to keep the ashram going. Now, there was not one particular person in charge. And out of those 21, there's probably almost none of the original 21 anymore. So there was always a thing with Osho that most of the time, usually somebody who wants to be president of a country is probably the last person that should be president because they actually have this ambition and this hunger for power. And that's why they want to do it. Now, most people who are really cool, especially in the more spiritual world, who are mellow and, you know, they go to a guru. It doesn't have to necessarily be Osho. And they just want to go and meditate. They don't want to have to think of administration or anything like that. They love their guru. They just want to be close to them. And they're not ambitious in any other way. those usually don't end up being people who make any important decisions in any kind of organization. So there's this fine line between administration, which is a very necessary evil in anything that's organized, and the people who really go there to do the work. And I feel like what's happened in the last maybe 20 years in the ashram that Osho left, that right now is basically the multiversity, and I think a lot of good things are happening, but I think at the same time, the person in charge has taken the liberty to do certain things that I don't agree with. And there's one thing that I really think that people should be careful about is sharing and reading these books that have been compiled based on Osho's original discourses. So there's these compilations. One can be called Love. And basically anything that Osho has ever said about love is packed into a book. And so it's all these sentences, and you really, it loses the value of the context of the actual discourses themselves. So I would say to people, always, if you want to listen to Osho, look for an original, try and find an original discourse. And if you're going to read, try to find an original book, because they're so different from these compilations that are being made right now. I think that's really, really important. And also that if you don't agree with anything that's happening maybe right now in Pune with the direction that Jayesh is taking Osho's work in, then say something about it. You know, do something, write about it, speak your voice out, communicate that to people who might be getting into Osho for the first time, that it's important to find his original work, and that, you know, Osho was much bigger than somebody who wanted to have a lot of disciples. All Osho wanted to do was open up a door that he really successfully opened up, and we all have access to all of his work, and it's there. The original scripts are really, really important. And I would say that anybody who has original books, take care of them. Really, really take care of them. Because it's very strange, but there's people who want to kind of erase that and present this kind of new, squeaky, clean, white tooth-looking image of Osho. And Osho wasn't that. He was a renegade. He was a rebel. That energy is still around. And just go to his original work. That's what I would say.
That is wonderful, beautiful. Thank you so much. It's so inspirational. And it's real in the Osho spirit. First about the book, I love books. And I left Singapore and we only have 5 boxes of Osho books kept somewhere. That's the only belonging that I couldn't give away. And they are original, most of them with the old editions, the no compilation. I totally agree with you. And then also the part on standing up. And, you know, Osho was a rebel. So the sannyasins, if sannyasins don't get that, if we don't get, if I don't get it, to be a rebel and stand up for myself, then I'm kind of, I didn't understand anything about Osho.
Also, if you want, I can send you, I have 2-minute excerpts from 2 discourses about him talking about love, which are amazing. And also I can send you, I'll go through my photos if you want. I can send you photos and stuff like that. And, anything you need, you can just write me and ask me.
Great, absolutely. I'd love to get that for sure. So we are getting really at the very end. I've got 2 final questions. I normally ask 3, but the 3rd one is, we already covered that about your relationship with Osho today. So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, I do one thing that I always learn from Osho. I wash my face with cold water, usually. The first thing I do, and even if I don't do it perfectly, I make my bed. Those are 2 things I do every morning. And I usually just sit down in silence and have a coffee and smoke my cigarette and contemplate life. I'm a pretty simple guy in that sense. The funny thing is this, I do have to say that Osho, that's why I would like to send you this little discourse. Osho, I always had this feeling that there's 2 paths. You know, I've tried, I've done all of the Osho meditations, my favorite thing, which I would love to sometimes do in my apartment, but I would probably get arrested, is the dynamic meditation, which I think is amazing. I'm a physical person, and I was brought up always with a lot of people who were more meditative, you know, more individual and more, you know, disciplined in that sense. Get up in the morning, sit down, do your meditation for 30 minutes. But Osho always used to also talk about these 2 paths, the path of meditation and the path of love. And I think that I'm basically was born, I'm a lover at heart. And the, through Osho, the path that I've chosen is the path of love. And so I just try to get in touch with that every morning, trying to get in touch with my with my love, not in a in a in a cheesy way, but you know, this it's hard to explain. It's kind of like describing the taste of chocolate or truffles or something like that, which is almost impossible. But it's a very subtle thing, and it's the perfume of love that wakes me up in the morning, basically.
You are so poetic, and definitely I can feel that. It's hard to put into words, but people can feel, I'm sure many people will feel that love and your energy. And by the way, you already answered the second question, because the second question is, what's your favorite meditation? So you just gave a beautiful explanation on that. So Siddhartha, has been amazing, super, super thrilling and exciting to connect with you, or speak with you and capture your story. And thank you for your contribution. Lots of love.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure. Thank you. I think it's really, really great that what you're doing. And if you would like, if I meet anybody who I think is would want to participate and would have something to share, I'll get them in touch with you. You know, I know a lot of really old, crazy, amazing, beautiful spirits who are into everything, but they've always stayed true to the base of Osho as well, which I really appreciate. So if you want, you know, in these next few months or whatever, I can always send you some interesting contacts and little bits and pieces here and there, and keep going. You've got my full support. If I can help you in any way, please don't hesitate to ask me. I think it's great what you're doing.
Wow, you're such a treasure, and it's a big, big yes. In this specific moment of my life, I have no work commitments. I'm fully dedicated to this. That's what I want to do. I want to collect as many stories as possible, because time goes by very fast and many sannyasins are passing away. So I feel hurry. I have to do this before it's too late. So thank you for your help.
Fantastic. Really, you have all my support. Okay, so please, I will be waiting for a message from you.
Great. Okay? You will get it soon. Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Great. Hopefully, we meet in person one day. Keep going. Absolutely. Man. Thank you very much.
Bye. Bye bye now.
Bye bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.